Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues.
Relationship to Black Lives Matter and the Black Lives Matter destruction and the chaos and the confusion, the vandalism, the arson, the murder of police officers, and the robbery, I would call it, the pillage of our nation out of an organization called Black Lives Matter. And yet, somehow, some way, our national leaders have reached out to embrace it. Even with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and a dozen or so of the socialist, Marxist, leftist congressmen in Washington, kneeing, bowing, kneeling before the idol of Black Lives Matter, if you will, in the U.S. Capitol, indicating, ladies and gentlemen, their embrace and their submission and subjugation to a socialist, anarchist, Marxist organization, Black Lives Matter. Now, I'm not concerned about the color of the skin with it. That happens to be their term, their name, and what they're doing. But ladies and gentlemen, Tucker Carlson says, and may I quote, Black Lives Matter is not about black lives. Over the weekend, something unprecedented happened in America. A small group of highly aggressive, emotionally charged activists took over our culture. They forced the entire country to obey their will. It all happened so fast with such ferocity that virtually no one resisted it. He was referring to the breathtaking pace at which statements of fact, opinion, that were entirely within the bounds of reasonable conversation became enough to get you fired from your job. Within just 1 week, he said, the new rule has become, you're not allowed to question Black Lives Matter in any way. The radical organization is not about black lives. It's a political party, maybe the strongest political party of the United States, Tucker Carlson said. Its members believe they can reshape this country, and so far, they're proving to be right. Over the past weekend, Black Lives Matter irrational chief policy prescription, defund police, has gained traction among some Democratic leaders. The president of the Minneapolis City Council, Lisa Bender, told CNN anchor Camerota, on Monday, that the belief the citizens should be able to call the police if someone breaks into their home comes from a place of privilege, she said, because for those of us whom the system is working, defending the push to defund policing, Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors contended in an interview last week that only racial radical shifts can stop law enforcement violence. In other words, they're saying, ladies and gentlemen, we must shut down the police. We must stop law enforcement. Can you imagine what it would be if that took place? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking at an article here that says homicides this week have increased 250% in L.A., that's Los Angeles, compared to last week, according to LAPD said. Dateline Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Police Department announced Tuesday that homicides in the city increased 250% over the previous week, and the number of people who were shot increased 56% during the same period of time. And ladies and gentlemen, the police department is still intact there, but it is being absolutely nullified, defanged by the political, socialist, Marxist, Democrat leaders that's in place, by the mayors, the city council members, and the governors of some of these states that absolutely are not for America at all, but for the fundamental change of America. And ladies and gentlemen, don't you dare think otherwise. They're doing it in the hopes and the plans and with the protocol in their mind that will destroy the re-election of President Donald J. Trump. I believe we have a caller on the line. Go over the question and the comment, please.
Good morning. I know the answer, but just for the record and for what I'm about to say, I wonder if you would repeat the topic of your show today.
The Death of a Nation, subtitled The Death of Freedom.
Yes, sir. And you know that many of us have been playing ping pong with that question for a long time. Unfortunately, today, probably about 10:30 this morning, we got the answer. You may or may not be aware of it, but America is now, in my opinion, officially dead by proclamation of the words of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley. My background is military, and to understand what I'm about to say, you probably ought to have a military background, at least as a field grade officer or as a senior enlisted man. I'm choosing my words carefully, but I mean every word, and I believe I'm 100% correct. Now, here's what I want to say. General Milley initially began to talk about his involvement with President Trump at Lafayette Park the other day when they all ended up going over to St. John's Church and Trump held up the Bible. And General Milley, in a sense, was correct in what he said. He should not have been involved in what was unfortunately characterized as a photo session, which it wasn't. But he said he shouldn't have been there as a senior officer doing that. Well, in essence, he probably is right, because as officers, you don't take a political position. You serve the government of the United States, and that government is determined by the people, by the ballot. But unfortunately, General Milley didn't keep his mouth shut. And he went on to deliver a speech at the graduating class of a national professional military education school that shapes America's senior leadership. These are the policymakers for the emerging leadership class of our military and also the civilian side of government. Now, what's unique is that General Milley's words were televised nationally. And that takes, I believe, an act of his boss, the Secretary of Defense, to approve that. That's not normally done, perhaps on C-SPAN, but it's not broadcast for general consumption. The question then is, why was it done? And in his speech, General Milley revealed to me what I knew and the reason I went ahead and retired early from the Air Force when I had a pretty nice assignment coming up, is that in America now, in our leadership ranks, because of these schools, these professional military schools, and I was enrolled in Air War College at the time that I left the Air Force, we get a lot of the academic instruction, the philosophy of government and the philosophy of leadership right out of the Ivy League schools. So you can take the most conservative and fairly well-grounded leaders with all sorts of merit badges on their chest for brave things they've done, and you fill their skulls full of mush with people like John Mearsheimer. So I'm going to stop for a moment and give you an example of skull full of mush material. I have a copy of an article, and you will have it shortly, called Why We Will Soon Miss the Cold War, written in August of 1990 by John Mearsheimer, a typical contributor to Atlantic Monthly, which is the magazine for the State Department and the intellectuals who like to say this is what's going to happen in the world. Another one would be Huntington. You're probably familiar with him, Samuel Huntington. But in any case, in this article, this man eventually argues for the proliferation of nuclear weapons to many, many nations so that the bipolar structure, the us versus them, U.S. versus Soviet Union, that died circa 1990, that peace that reigned because of the mutual assured destruction possibility, they call it the nuclear peace from 1945 to 1989 or 1990, could be issued throughout the world. The theory of Mr. Mearsheimer, one of these liberals that fills leadership heads with mush, is that by handing out nuclear weapons, we'd make it a peaceful world. And that certainly, we saw that in the activities of the Democrat administration in the 90s and some of the behind-the-scenes things that happened in the Obama administration, and it may even have been at play in Libya, possibly. But the point is, no one in their right mind would believe distributing nuclear weapons to many nations would be a good idea for maintaining world peace. But that sort of stuff got out, and you can see its influence and other things that have been written over the years and studied in the various military professional schools. Nonsense. Nonsense. But because it came out of the adulterated by the Marxist school School of Cultural Marxism, Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism, through Columbia University and into the Ivy Leagues, it has that stamp of, well, this is smart stuff. And so we send that to our leaders. I have a cousin, very high-ranking individual in a very sensitive position in our nation, a great hero, great pilot. But he was sent to get an advanced degree at Harvard University and at the various professional schools, so he could teach at the academy and go on to be an advisor at the presidential level to one of our presidents. A good man had his head filled with mush, and I watched it happen through these schools. So today, General Mark Milley makes a speech, and in that speech, he in my view, revealed himself not as a leader, but what in our fully feminized culture leadership has become in this nation. And it's nothing more than bellicose or belligerent management. We have managers, not leaders. Leaders are men with vision, men with character, men with courage, and hopefully men who have a foundation in the Christian faith. Our friend, in my opinion, General Mark Milley, who vastly outranks me, I retired as a major, so consider my words carefully, but General Mark Milley today revealed himself to be nothing more than a liberal academic manager, and I stand by that. The military schools, professional officer development, especially those for the chosen, the senior ranks, are fed the liberal academic views of the New York, of the Ivy League schools, like I said, and that's under the guise of military professional education. And 4-star General Mark Milley is an example, and he's a victim, and we're a victim of him. Now, what is left in America right now because of his proclamation is a de facto coup against the president of the United States. Yes. And he just shut up after he said, well, I really shouldn't have been there at Lafayette Park. He's probably right. But when his words were broadcast, words that were diametrically opposed to things the president of the United States, that he salutes as commander-in-chief and says will follow, undermined the position of the president and telegraphed to the world everything that he said he didn't want to do. And by that I mean this. General Mark Milley said, implied, well, the command of this country doesn't agree with the president, and therefore telegraphed even more ominous things, things hinted at by Nancy Pelosi when she said the Speaker of the House, which is me, should be the leader of this country, telegraphed the desire, I believe, of these skulls full of mush to remove the lawfully elected president who does what? He stands for the Judeo-Christian ethic. So today, to end this commentary, here's what I believe happened around 10:30 on June the 11th. The senior military representative, Chief of Staff General Mark Milley, openly declared that he, and by association those behind him, don't agree with the President of the United States, and that the values of the Black Lives Matter is now what has replaced the underlying Judeo-Christian principles of this country. Today, at about 10:30 on June the 11th, the America that we knew died. That's the America based on the Judeo-Christian ethic. It's gone. It cannot come back. We're toast. But we still have a message to declare. Jesus Christ is coming back, and he will save any who call out to him. We need to be preaching that. One final thought. The words that I've said represent, and I'm choosing these words very carefully, and you might want to comment on them. The words that I speak represent a minority. We're no longer, we, those who speak as I do not represent a majority. We represent essentially 10% of black voters and 10% of white professing Christians. There's a subtle difference there, and I chose the words intentionally. We are the few that are left. Many are called, but few are chosen, and many shall say to me in that day, Lord, didn't we do this and didn't we do that? And I, Jesus says, depart from me, you cursed, because I knew you not. The minority has been identified, and that's those talking about the issues you're talking about. The new majority has been revealed. And all they're doing is acting out in the streets. The millennials are acting out in the streets, a scene from Les Miserables with the barricades and the big red flag flying. But America's over because the principles of the Judeo-Christian ethic were today repudiated intentionally or unintentionally, by General Mark Milley in a very inappropriate comment and a speech delivered and approved by the Secretary of Defense. God save us.
Yes, thank you so much for those comments. You're exactly right, because what we see represented there in General Mark Milley with his stand, he is saying to the world, he's saying to America, he's saying, in essence, to Black Lives Matter, that no longer do we follow the president. No longer does the president have the leadership role in America. In fact, you alluded to it a moment ago, where, and I'm looking at an article that says, Nancy Pelosi suggests eliminating the office of the president. The speaker should be the voice of the people. This article says, Nancy Pelosi isn't even hiding her intentions to take over the government in a coup that would make Fidel Castro jealous. In a statement to donors at an exclusive dinner for Hollywood elitist, Pelosi said, quote, "We shouldn't be hampered by the executive branch at all. We've learned that giving one person too much power can be dangerous," end quote. Further, she says, "Trump will make it easy to achieve our goal by 2024, which is to eliminate the office of president and make the Speaker of the House the supreme leader of the country." She says, "I am, after all, the voice of the people," end quote. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're watching the Black Lives Matter in concert with the Socialist Marxist Democrat Party. We're watching them in concert working to overthrow the fundamental foundation of America and destroy the future of anything that would be called freedom in our nation. And as our previous caller just said, we're watching the death of a nation and the death of freedom. And when we think about it, ladies and gentlemen, of what Black Lives Matter really stands for and who they are, for the benefit of those that perhaps did not hear a previous broadcast, I need to just simply bring this in very, very clearly. Black Lives Matter, Marxist, Stalinist tactics, are Black Lives Matter de facto terrorist organization. We watched Black Lives Matter terrorize our nation with riots and vandalism and theft and arson, as well as murder. And according to the three Marxist females that started Black Lives Matter, let me give you a little thumbnail sketch overview of Black Lives Matter and who they really are. And any of this that you challenge, look it up, research it yourself. Some of it has already been taken down and are shadow banded by the social media so that you cannot find some of these things. Originated in 2013 with Trayvon Martin's case, the three founders, Patrice Cullors and Alice Garcia, and Opal Tometi, one of them brags about being a feminist queer, her words, not mine. They're exploiting black lives and promoting the Marxist revolution. That is no law, no order, no police department, just simply thugs carrying it out. In fact, the thugs on the West Coast in Seattle, we'll talk about that further in a moment, those thugs are already saying that we can police our own. We do not need a police department. They're using the same tactics as the Weather Underground with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, which tutored Barack Hussein Obama as a community organizer. These three founders, listen, here's what I want you to understand. These three founders that make up Black Lives Matter, and they have these chapters now in America and in Canada and in other nations. These three founders work for front groups as the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, which is one of the largest radical leftist Marxist organizations in America. They also work as part of the front for the Communist Party USA, the Democratic Socialists of America, the Committees of Correspondents for Democracy and Socialism, and the focus organizations born out of this group absolutely are horrific. ACORN being one of them, now called the Dream Defenders, and the Service Employees International Union. Ladies and gentlemen, we're watching the unfolding of the ultimate destruction of the fundamentals of the United States of America. Black Lives Matter is not about black lives at all. I want you to understand that. You could call it White Lives Matter or Yellow Lives Matter or Purple Lives Matter. It doesn't make any difference what you call it. It's not about lives at all. It's about total domination and the fundamental change of the United States of America and making it into a socialist, Marxist, Stalinist country. Here's an article that says Black Lives Matter means more moolah and more racial hatred. Black billionaires and New Age thinker like Oprah Winfrey is hosting a show on her own network Tuesday and Wednesday to demand more money for black lives. That is what we want. In fact, she goes on to quote the Black Entertainment Network founder, Robert Johnson. It's already told publicly, already said, that he's demanding $14 trillion for slavery reparations for all blacks in America. Ladies and gentlemen, when you understand America has about $4 trillion maximum total funds coming in each year, and they're wanting to distribute $14 trillion for blacks in the United States of America, about 40 million, want to distribute $14 trillion that supposedly will assuage the Black Lives Matter terrorist group. No, it won't. It'll simply inflame it to do more. It has gotten to the point, ladies and gentlemen, that free speech is gone if you say anything about Black Lives Matter. Here's one that says, liberal professor, free speech taking serious hits because of George Floyd case. And it goes on to talk about how he had refused to allow his students, black students, in the university that he's teaching in, refused to allow them to opt out of taking a final exam because they were so wrought up and bothered by the death of George Floyd. And he refused to do so. And now he's been put on administrative leave with the possibility of losing his job simply because he did what the school policy called for. And ladies and gentlemen, I have said, and so often you've heard, if there are no consequences for what is taking place, it only brings about anarchy. It only brings about anarchy. But one of the things that I must allow you to understand, the major tenets of belief for the Black Lives Matter, as well as Antifa, is a six-point organized structure. Number one, destroy capitalism. Number two, the weapons of choice is systematic racism and police racism. Number three, identify the victim classes. Number four, organize the victim classes. Five, engage in international solidarity with the global movement. And number six is to attack and dethrone God. And ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what we see taking place today. And that's exactly what we see happening when you see across the nation, you heard at the top of the news, where we have more and more of our monuments and statues being removed in America, is to remove, hear me, it's to remove, to eviscerate, to absolutely destroy anything that would be called national heritage or national history right here in our city, in Virginia, and in other cities across America. We're watching the defacing of, the destruction of, and the removal of the fundamental historical statues in our nation. But ladies and gentlemen, the Bible is very, very clear when it talks about the monuments and what they're for. At your leisure, you can go to Joshua, the fourth chapter, and look at chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. And when they crossed the Jordan River, they were told to put a monument there of stones. And the monument of stones was there. And the purpose was so that in the future, when their sons and their daughters and their grandkids would say, Mommy, Daddy, Grandpa, Grandma, what are these stones for? That they would be able to go back and recite history to them as to why God had had them to put them there. Our national heritage monuments are benchmarks for history. Some may not like that history. Some may disagree with that history. Some may want to destroy that history, but it's still factual. But ladies and gentlemen, it's just like in Islam today. The Islamics say that there was never a temple on the Temple Mount in Israel, in Jerusalem. They decried the fact that the Temple Mount never had a temple. They say that there was never anything called the Holocaust with the Jewish people. They're simply wanting to rewrite history. And we think that's bad, but what we're seeing today, ladies and gentlemen, is the attempt to rewrite history by undermining and tearing down and destroying our statues and our monuments and our heritage. Confederate state statue removed from the park overnight in Jacksonville, Florida, according to this article. Here's another one. Virginia has the most Confederate memorials in the country, but that might change. Ladies and gentlemen, it goes against a federal statute that makes it illegal to tear down or to destroy any of these monuments. But yet it's being done. It was done by the mayor here in Jacksonville, Florida. It's being carried out by Governor Northam in Virginia. This article says, and this is about the statue that I spoke of, Confederate soldiers and sailors and Marines that fought in the Civil War were made U.S. veterans by an act of Congress in 1957. U.S. Public Law 85-425, Section 410, approved May 23rd of 1958. This made all Confederate Army, Navy, Marine veterans equal to U.S. veterans. Additionally, under the Public Law 810, approved by the 17th Congress, 26th of February, 1929, the War Department was directed to erect headstones and recognize Confederate grave sites and the U.S. War Dead grave sites. Just for the record, the last Confederate soldier died in 1958. When you remove the Confederate statue or a monument or a headstone, you are in fact removing a statue, a monument, or a headstone of a U.S. veteran. And it goes on to say in this decree, whoever in a circumstance described in subsection B willfully injures or destroys or attempts to injure or destroy any structure, a plaque or a statue or a monument on public property commemorating the service of a person or persons in the armed forces of the United States shall be fined under this title, imprisoned, not more than 10 years or both. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, we find these that are doing that feeling somehow, some way that they have the authority, the right, the privilege, and the power to do so. Alan Dershowitz says on the statutes, liberals are doing what Stalin did, erasing history. And that's what we see taking place, ladies and gentlemen. And yet here's Nancy Pelosi now that's urging the Confederate statutes to be removed from the Capitol. House Speaker says statutes paying homage to hate, not heritage, but decisions will fall on the states. She is insisting that those statutes in Statuary Hall be removed if she deems that it is representing hate rather than heritage. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize what is happening today. I'm thankful that a Virginia judge just blocked the plans of the governor of Virginia of removing the Robert E. Lee statue. It's a 10-day stay, and I'm praying during that 10 days there'll be enough arguments and decision that it will foreclose the potentiality of Governor Northam from removing the Robert E. Lee statue there in Richmond, Virginia. Virginia has more statues than any other place in the nation. But Black Lives Matter, ladies and gentlemen, have shut down part of Seattle, Washington. They've taken control of 6 to 10 blocks, and they're claiming that is their own city. They have said no law enforcement. They've shut down one of the police precincts. They've taken total control. But that's a sign, that's an indication, that's a symbol to each and every one of us to realize what they're intending to do across America. We're watching, ladies and gentlemen, the death, the demise of our nation and the death of freedom in America. We must seek God's face, turn from our wicked ways, and ask Him to intervene and heal our lands. Thank you for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, we're looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University. 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.